You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 17, today Ouringa.
Without doubt, actually, it feels like a yellow card, but a straight red, as it were, feels incredibly, incredibly harsh, I must say.
Well, the voice you heard there at the start was that of Dave Brailsford, the team principal at Team Ineos, talking to you, Lionel, a moment or two ago, because there's been drama today after the stage.
There has indeed, yeah. Team Ineos rider Luke Rowe and Jumbo-Visma rider Tony Martin have both been kicked out of the race. Well, we'll hear a bit more from Dave Brailsford after the tale of the attack. But a hot day on the road to Gap and tempers flared. But, as we'll hear from Dave Brailsford, he felt that it was a very, very harsh decision to expel both riders.
Yeah, we'll talk about this in more detail later on, but we've been watching the footage of Martin and Rowe clashing, and it's clear that it wasn't just a kind of one-off incident. There were afters, weren't there? And there were fans very close to the altercation as well, and it could have been dangerous for them and for other riders. So very harsh decision, quite an unusual decision. Second year in a row, Team Ineos, Team Sky, as they were last year, have had a rider sent from home from the race for violent conduct. So we'll talk about that in a moment, but can we have the... Well, should I also say that Francois Tomaso is not here?
Not really. Only maybe that I remember at the start of the tour talking with Jacques Durand, you know, former rider, who's now a consultant for Eurosport in France, and was saying in the old days, you know, this sort of things happen all the time, especially in the first hours of the race when the TV were not showing it. But he said now, with the broadcast live all day, plus, you know, the social networks, and you can't get away with these sort of things. It used to be, well, always forbidden, but it used to be quite, you know, you could do it without anybody seeing. It's finished, you know, in this day and age, this sort of you know, temper flaring, this sort of violence at the front of the bunch cannot go unnoticed and probably cannot go unpunished.
Well, other stuff happened today as well, Lionel. Can we have the tale of the attack, please?
Indeed we can, Rich. Well, it was a fantastic win by Italy's European road race champion, Matteo Trentin, giving Mitchelton Scott their fourth stage win of the tour and drawing them level with Jumbo-Visma on that particular score. Anyway, it was stage 17 from the Pont du Gard to Gap, 200 kilometres. Very, very hot, as you said, Richard. There was a quite heavy rain burst around three quarters of the way through the stage, which maybe refreshed the riders briefly. We didn't have the benefit of that, but it was...
Hang on, what was there, Lionel?
Heavy rain.
Indeed, it was heavy rain. And as we expected, it was a breakaway, a big break that went away in the first hour of racing. 33 riders in the break. And it really stayed together until about the last 30 kilometres. So the 33 riders broke down into a group of 11 as they were approaching the final climb. Greg Van Avermaet, Matteo Trentin, Pierre-Luc Perrichon, Ben King, Tom Schuyens, Daniel Oss and Kasper Asgreen were among the riders in that. With 14 kilometres to go, just before they started climbing for real, Trentin went alone. He really caught everybody else by surprise. Perrichon was chasing him but couldn't get on terms, so Trentin went over the top solo. And then we saw Asgreen really go very hard. He caught Perrichon but couldn't get up to Trentin, and so then we had this descending competition with Trentin ahead of Asgreen, ahead of Perrichon, and then the rest of the group. They were split by around three quarters of a minute. Trentin held on, a very impressive victory. The rest of the break came in over about 9.5 minutes, and the main part of the bunch came in 20 minutes and 10 seconds down. The time gained by Zandro Murisa of Wanty Groupe-Gobert meant that he has moved up six places to 13th overall. He's also the best placed Belgian in the race, 11.08 down on the yellow jersey, Julian Alaphilippe.
Another break like that and he could win it.
And exactly, yeah. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on him tomorrow morning. With only 2 minutes and 14 seconds separating the first six, tomorrow really is the first of 3 days in the Alps that will decide the winner of the Tour, and they go over the Col de Var, the Col d'Isoir and the Col du Galibier before the descent to Valois. But the race has really been overshadowed by the disqualification of Team Ineos' road captain and multiple former world time trial champion Tony Martin.
the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, Rafa, for their support. And a reminder, we're looking out for nominations for Pedlar de Charme this week to give one of the fantastic Pedlar de Charme t-shirts at the end of the week. A lot of support for Marcus Burghardt, who was nominated last week. And, well, I think generally charming behaviour from Marcus Burghardt. So he may well be on the shortlist again this week. There was a kid that he met, I think, at the start in Brussels, who made quite an impression on him. And he presented him with a hat and he signed the kid's jersey. And he's now looking to get in touch with the kid to send him a present after the tour, which is very nice. So there's a Twitter search for this kid that he met in Brussels, and hopefully that can be sorted out. Now, the big news today, I mean, it's kind of unfair on Matteo Trentin because it was an outstanding win by him today. A rider who, you know, he's a fast finisher. Wouldn't go so far as to call him a bunch sprinter, but just to revisit an old debate, but he's a fast finisher, and I think most people expected him to wait for the finish, but he won in really impressive fashion today. But the news that came a little bit after stage of the finish really has overshadowed everything today. And going into the 3 days in the Alps, Tony Martin and Luke Rowe, very important riders for their respective teams, and both, of course, have riders who could still win the Tour. Stephen Kruijswijk in the case of Tony Martin, and Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal for Team Ineos. So it could have an impact on the race. It's a severe and unusual punishment, but there are, you know, allowances in the rules for this sort of punishment. We saw last year when Gianni Moscon was kicked off the race for throwing a punch. It looks from the footage that, I don't know if Luke Rowe threw a punch, but contact was made with Tony Martin after Tony Martin appeared to try to ride Tony Martin off, to try and ride Luke Rowe off the road. It looked as though Luke Rowe then confronted him, and it went on for some time, and it's putting other riders in danger. And as I say, there were roadside fans in close proximity too.
Well, let's hear from Team Ineos boss Dave Brailsford, who I spoke to on the phone shortly after they had received the verdict of the UCI jury. So, Dave, what can you tell us? What's happened? We know that Tony Martin and Luke Rowe are out of the race, but what do you know?
Got called by the commissaires after the race after somebody shouted, "Oh, what did you make of that?" And I didn't really know, kind of wasn't too clear what he was talking about, but there's obviously an altercation, as it were, but it wasn't, I can't even call it an altercation, it was coming together. You know, both teams, you know, Jumbo and ourselves, both teams just in position. As you do, they come into the foot of the final climb. Tony's come across Luke. Luke's obviously tried to go again past him. They deem that severe enough, aggravated enough. They can both up the race. In reality, I mean, it feels maybe like a yellow card. Or without doubt, actually, it feels like a yellow card, but a straight red, as it were. Feels incredibly, incredibly harsh, I must say.
What do you think the reasoning was? Did they explain? Was it because of the proximity to spectators on the side of the road, or was it because it kind of went on afterwards?
No, not really. They didn't give much of an explanation, to be honest. Obviously, the rules are clear in terms of seriousness and the aggravated nature, but it didn't really seem to... they just kind of said, yeah, that's our decision. Not a lot can do from there, really. But Luke and Tony rode in together the last 10K. You know, I was going to Richard at Lotto, and we're both... You know, both teams feel exactly the same. You know, both taken aback. This don't see it as a big deal. Didn't see it as a big issue. Nobody's upset. Nobody thought we had any concerns about it. So we're both bitterly disappointed, and we'll be kind of collectively looking at the situation together and very, very closely.
But there's no immediate appeals process with regard to continuing in the tour. That's it, is it?
Yeah, there's no appeals process. But equally, I think you've got to make sure we'll sit down and we'll look at this with Richard and Lotto and ourselves and just say, okay, hold on a minute. The rules, there's a lot of investment and time and effort goes into this. It's been a fantastic tour, hasn't it? You know, I think when you look at the overall bigger picture context, it's been a happy tour in many respects in terms of the crowds and the nature of the race. We've come in, it's incredibly hot. You know, they've been riding in nearly 40 degrees heat. They come into a final, you know, a final situation where, you know, it's something and nothing, quite frankly. And I think if you took a bigger picture view of the whole situation, I think a yellow card, like you said, they were fine, and a caution or whatever would have been acceptable by all parties. But to take him out of the race, I mean, it's incredibly hard on Luke, and I mean, it's not, we're not talking about any old rider here. It's Tony Martin. You know, he's like world champion. He's a big sort of pillars of the sport. And likewise with Luke. And I just think for those riders, it's very, very harsh.
Do you think there's any chance of a reprieve before the morning? Is there any protocol or process you can go through, or is that it, do you think?
Well, if history is anything to go by, a decision's a decision, I think, with the commissaires. They're not going to change their minds, I would say. And unless we can find a legal, you know, interpretation, which nobody wants to start going down that road, really, you know, in terms of legal kind of situation. But it does remind me of various other situations we've had of late, you know, when the rules have been interpreted maybe overzealously, and people have actually come out with, you know, overturned decisions. But they tend to happen later down the line rather than before the morning and the riders get to start.
And lastly, I mean, how does this affect your planning for the next 3 days? Because although they're three difficult mountain stages, Luke Rowe is the road captain of the team and has a big job to... would have had a big job to play, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't lose any member of the team, and Luke is a big character in the team, and exactly what you say, he's road captain, so it's not ideal, but, you know, we managed to do it previously with seven riders and fewer riders, so in terms of his direct impact on the race, I don't think that's my major kind of concern. I think it's the fairness, right application of the rules, which is kind of front to mind for me at the minute, really.
Well, Dave Brailsford not holding out much hope for a change of mind from the jury. It seems unlikely that they'll have a change of heart overnight. There isn't actually any provision for an appeal, so looks like both Ineos and Jumbo-Visma will be without key men for the closing days. And really, both of them perform the same sort of role for their respective teams. They're capable of riding certainly the first climbs. They're capable of riding on flat roads and doing a lot of work in the mountain stages. And, well, that's probably why they were, competing for the same bit of ground. I mean, you know, you could say, well, the group's coming in 20 minutes down. Is anyone going to try anything on that climb to steal a few seconds? The chances of that probably fairly slim, but the race as a whole is a three-week battle for supremacy, isn't it? And so ground given now might be significant tomorrow, and that's kind of how the riders think, isn't it? They think, if I want that space, I want that wheel, I want to get that space, that wheel, because when it really does matter, I want to have kind of asserted my supremacy over the next guy. And those riders are really racing in very direct competition a lot of the time, and so you can understand that they don't want to give an inch. But when, you know, hands come off the handlebars, or when somebody's steered towards the edge of the road, does make the decision easy for the commissaires.
Absolutely. I mean, it's obvious, you know, we tend from time to time to put the, especially on boring stages, to put these kind of riders into the focus, because I mean, that's sometimes we call them road captains, but in this case they're more like bodyguards. I mean, even physically, they're much more impressive than their leaders, and they're there to maintain order in the peloton. And from time to time, if one of them, and you could have, on this tour, you had Maxime Montfort doing this for Lotto Soudal. You had other guys. Well, Kasper Asgreen, but he was in front today, who usually does this for De Koninck Quickstep, and this guy kind of battle to keep the front of the bunch, and there's a kind of unwritten rule of how it should be done. Obviously, you know, tempers flared, as you say, and tempers flared in such a way that actually Julien Alaphilippe, who's still in the yellow jersey, we tend to forget it before we get into the mountains, actually came to talk to Tony Martin and to tell both of them, guys, please calm down. You know, we got the guys in the front are no threat whatsoever to us. The
apart
GC
from Maurice, who's going to win.
Yeah,
the
that's right. Yeah, but I'm glad, because, as you know, I talked to Maurice one day at the start, and you know, because I was intrigued about, usually the wanting Gobert riders, you know, they go in a breakaway and they crack in the finish and lose 10 minutes. But it's not the case of Alexandre Maurice. Is very, but yeah, apart from Maurice, I mean, there was no, absolutely no threat to the ambitions of this guy. So a really silly move by both of them, because I mean the price to pay in the Alps might be important, and so you know, some might, if I was looking at it with a kind of a complotist frame of mind, I would say that's good news for Thibaut Pinot.
Will be sent home tomorrow. I have to say, we should add as well that Luke Rowe came out and spoke after the decision was known, or actually before the decision was officially known, and I gave a very gracious interview where he said he felt he'd let his team down and took responsibility in that sense. I'm sure he, like Brailsford, feels that the decision is very harsh, but it was, you know, good to see him taking responsibility. It was certainly a little bit better than Jenny Moscon's videoed apology last year. A little bit more convincing than that.
Very important question I'm asking myself. What becomes of a rival podcast that was going on since the start of the tour, including Luke Rowe? What's occurring?
You ask all the big questions, Francois.
I knew someone has to ask the real questions.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk conspiracy theories, the French have purchased the Russian weather machine to turn the temperatures cool for Thibaut Pinot's liking over the weekend.
Is it a podcast conspiracy, actually, to get rid of a threat?
Well, maybe. Maybe, yeah.
We paid off the race due, didn't
just,
we?
Yeah, a kind of last serious point on it. I think that the thing is, it's about showing that there's no place for, you know, hands off the handlebars and hands on other riders in a sort of an aggressive sense. And so, while it does feel like a yellow card, you can't complain if the jury see it more harshly. It's as I said you give the jury the opportunity to make the harsh decision when the footage is reasonably clear what's happened. I mean, you don't,
when you see the extended footage, it's a lot more than just Tony Martin riding Luke Rowe off the road. There were, you know, it carried on for quite a bit after, and there was a bit more at another point as well, so a bit of beef, you know, which I think, as Jackie Giron said, it's probably going on all the time, but when it's caught on television like that,
when we were driving into the centre of Gap here and talking about it, Rich, I said it was very much vegetarian beef. I didn't think it was a...
So corn.
I was pretty... Yeah, corn.
Yeah, everybody was playing it down. I mean, at the team in Ineos bus, you were there, Lionel. Geraint Thomas talked and said, well, you know, it's no big deal. And the impression at the time, I mean, just after the finish line, was that, well, okay, that there had been, you know, gestures and maybe some rules had been kind of broken, but nobody seemed aware that, you know, there might be a kind of a serious sanction from the commissaire. So quite a surprise and quite unfortunate. I mean, once again, nothing was at stake. It's like in a football match, a rough tackle. Sometimes I'm not encouraging this, but from time to time you can save a goal. In this case, nothing was at stake whatsoever.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind us to tell you that this episode of our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. We had a go on the Watt Bike in June, and I must admit, doing indoor training in the summer is not something that I have ever really considered before, mainly because, the weather's nice and you want to be outside. But if you're trying to gain fitness quickly, as I was for the London to Brighton, it can be invaluable. And so it was a new experience for me, that. And
you did an FTP test as well, didn't you, Lionel?
Yes, well, we'll reveal all about that.
We've run a competition on social media to guess your FTP. Didn't we?
Yeah, well, we're not revealing that this evening.
No.
We'll reveal that before the end of the tour. Don't you worry.
Sorry.
Anyway,
I just wanted to make sure we hadn't missed that out.
I spoke to Dan Bigham of the Hoop Watt Bike team, and I wanted to get a sense of how a Watt Bike training schedule can be beneficial in the summer months, because we do think of indoor training as being a winter activity, and well, it's been very, very hot here and on the Tour de France, and his answer really surprised me.
I think obviously everyone wants to go and ride outside, and that's the part of cycling I think we enjoy, but on the other hand, if you're taking performance seriously, then you've got the fact that you need to train specifically, you need to get those intervals done, and I think you can't get away from it on a Watt bike, that you are going to get that done, and you're going to know you're hitting those numbers. But I mean, the other interesting one, which is what we start to use it for a lot in the past 6 months or so, is heat training and heat acclimatization. So a lot of races nowadays, especially in the middle of summer, getting real hot. I mean, last summer was crazy. Top end of 20s, early 30s, and being able to do lots of specific stuff but at high temperature has been really, really beneficial. So we can control that. Even if it's in your, Johnny did it in his bedroom where he put a few heaters on and got stuck in that way. But it meant that you could get good quality training done, get it indoors and get all the adaptations from high heat. So it's plasma volume expansion and actually the perceptiveness of being able to perform well during heat. I think it's the same across the board. If you're going to be doing haute route, then you're probably going to hit some hot days. If you're doing some of the longer stage races or even some of the domestic races, it's going to get real hot and you're going to have to be able to tolerate that. So it's just another aspect of indoor training that's oddly fallen in quite quickly with us, that getting adapted to heat is a really, really good thing.
Well, very appropriate comments there from Dan Bigham about the heat, because we are suffering through a heat wave at the moment, aren't we, in France?
Just shows that the Watt bike has that versatility because you can control the environment. And when you're trying to do a hard effort, if you're trying to train in a specific way, you really can't replicate that out on the road. You might not have the right gradient, you might have to stop at a roundabout or traffic lights. You've got a totally controlled environment on the Watt bike.
Did you get into three figures with your FTP?
Richard, please, please. If you would like to buy a Watt bike, Atom, you can do so at wattbike.com. And if you do so before the end of July, you can also get £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers with every Watt bike Atom purchased. Go to wattbike.com/TCP100 and use the code TCP100 at checkout to receive the offer. That code is TCP and the number 100.
100? Was that your score?
Richard, honestly.
Well, as I said earlier, a fantastic stage win for Matteo Trentin. Not his first stage win at the Tour de France.
He's won stages
before, of course.
He won that bunch sprint in Lyon, if you remember.
Not really. It wasn't a bunch sprint. It was a big escape. He won some bunch sprints at the Vuelta. He's a fast finisher, so he's been strong in this race, and it was surprising to see him go when he went. Some real strong riders formed in the chasing group behind him.
I disagree with that. I don't think it was a surprise that he went before the climb. I was talking to a couple of sports directors afterwards, because obviously we were all thinking, well, it will kick off on the climb. But the thing was, the group was so big, 33 riders, that they needed to whittle it down beforehand. And they did that really by using the roads. There were a couple of tight turns that kind of meant the gaps opened. It meant that first group of 11 could kind of clip off. And once Trentin was in that position, looking at the guys around him, if he felt strong enough, which he clearly did, go before you get into the climb. Maybe, worst case scenario, you drag a couple of climber types with you who then can help you on the climb. And then he would feel like, well, I've got the better chance in the finishing sprint, or stay away all the way to the line. And I think, Richard, your point when we were talking about this in the car on the way into town here is absolutely right. That was a stage win based on form as well as caliber. I mean, Greg Van Avermaet, in absolutely ideal circumstances, you would think he's going to be really dangerous in this group, but Trentin is absolutely flying, and maybe Greg Van Avermaet and some of the others in that group weren't.
And it goes beyond individual form. You have the impression in this sort of front, some teams have the dynamic, some teams are on a wave, and others just can't make it. And Greg Van Avermaet, yet there were quite a few stages designed for him, stages he would have won in the past, and he just can't, and his team CCC are not doing a lot. And in the same time, you've got this kind of wave on which currently Mitchelton Scott are, and Jumbo Visma and Lotto Soudal are kind of surfing on those waves. I mean, they really apparently came on the Tour with the right form, to picking at the right time. And that's what actually I talked at the finish to the real Matt Wilson, the Mitchelton Scott sports director, was in the car in the break, and so he was just behind Matteo Trentin, and he said that they never doubted, they knew the strongest man in this break was Matteo Trentin, and he said something very simple. After 2 weeks, more than 2 weeks on the Tour, who are the guys in form and who are the guys who are not in form. And obviously, they were not very wary of Greg Van Avermaet. They've seen before in this Tour de France that it's not the Greg Van Avermaet of old. And so yes, as you said, moving so far from the finish because it was a bold move. It was actually a matter of confidence, a matter of form, and the team is flying. You know, four, as you said, four victories, and they kind of promise more. You know, in the days to come.
What to say? You know, all those wins. There's a very good dynamic in the team at the moment.
There is. There's great dynamic, a great morale. Everyone came in with great form and healthy, and a bit disappointing with the GC with Adam. But the second that was over, you know, we knew we had a good team there ready to go.
We're confident Matteo was obviously one of the men to beat in that breakaway, but there were other big names there, Greg Van Avermaet, a couple of others. What was the plan? I mean, obviously attack in the last climb, but he did it really right on time.
We were confident. You know, we've been in this race for a couple of weeks now, who's going well and who's not. And we knew Matteo was going as well, or if not better, on the climbs than anyone there, and that he would probably beat most in a sprint. So we're pretty confident, but the dangerous part was that 20K beforehand. If he got caught behind in a split, or if you take Van Avermaet to the finish, you never know as well. So that were the dangers.
It was a pretty bold move, actually. It was quite, well, of course, that's the last climb, but there's still a long way to go and a descent.
Very long way to go, yeah. Before the actual climb even started. But he's a very confident man, Matteo. When he feels good, he just goes, rides on instinct. So, yeah.
Three very difficult days ahead, but probably rain, I mean, change of climate, everything. What's the plan? More stage wins, more attempts to get in the breakaways. They are short stages, it's not easy. What's the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. There's three good stages left for us. And you're seeing the GC, it's been so close, and no team really has control of the general classification. So that's a good opportunity for breakaways, you know, for guys that are off GC. And we've got three world-class climbers there and, you know, three more chances.
Simon in the Pyrenees showed what he could do, you know, when he's in the break. Do you think this time the other teams will let him go?
Well, the good thing is about when you're in the Alps, they don't have much choice. If you've got the legs, you can be there. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so we're announcing a new victory by Simon Yates in the Alps.
No, I'm not announcing anything.
Well, that was apparently Matt Wilson. We'll have to take Francois' word at that. But he's on the move, apparently, to CCC, Matteo Trentin, over the winter. He's only been at Mitchell & Scott this year and last year. Really strong rider. And I imagine a team like CC will look on him as a leader rather than as... It's difficult to know where he fits in at Mitchell & Scott because their team was such a focus now on GC that he's a bit of a bit part player. He's had his opportunity here because the GC ambitions haven't worked out. But at CCC, they're a team that are really in search of winners and leaders. And Greg Van Avermaet, who you mentioned, may be in decline now. You know, he's not getting any younger, but he was in that move today. And he was in that move with his great friend Michael Schaar, who he has been a teammate with forever. I was looking up some stats on pro cycling stats the other day, and I was trying to figure out which riders had ridden the most with other riders in the race. And Schaar and Van Avermaet have ridden together, I think, something like 550 race days, which is incredible.
Wow, that's a year and a half worth of racing.
Yeah, they're roommates, they're great friends as well, and Schaar was in the break today as well. And I was curious to know just how, by being in the break, he could help his great friend Van Avermaet today. So I spoke to him at the finish.
It looked like a long, hot day out there.
Yeah, it was indeed. Again, like yesterday started the big heat wave. Today we had the same. It was fine. Once we had a little shower. It was the first time in my life I was happy to have rain on me.
And was that a plan today for you to try and get in that move? I know this was a stage that certainly suited Greg, wasn't it? So was it a plan by the team to get you or someone else in the move as well?
Absolutely. It was our plan to go in there. We had Greg's chance today. That's, yeah, it's pretty obvious. The next 3 days in the Alps, we have not so much to do. And we wanted to have another guy additionally to help him, to be there, to bring him the bottles and just help each other out.
And what can you do once you're in that move? It was a big group, obviously. What can you do to try and help Greg?
Well, I can do a lot. I can help each other. I mean, I was always rolling in the first part of the group. He was rolling a bit backwards, just so I kept care that the group kept rolling together, that it stayed smooth, and he had more time to a bit recover and rest. Then another part is to bring the bottles. If you take it for yourself, you take it for him. So you help each other for that. And then you also can give each other some motivation. So you look good, yeah.
You're good friends, aren't you and Greg? I was looking on Pro Cycling Stats. You've been teammates for a long time, obviously, but can you guess, do you know how many days you've raced with Greg?
Yeah, Phoebe just told me that before a number of 500. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know that we spend a lot of time together the last, since BMC, I don't know if it's almost 10 years, but we're always rooming together. Sometimes we're joking. I counted my days off from Switzerland, it was 240 last year, mostly with Greg, so sometimes we sleep more same room together than with our wives.
Did you become friends as soon as you became teammates? Did you hit it off with them?
Yeah, actually, we started the first evening he joined BMC. We had a fun night out. I had to save him a little bit. It was fun, and since then we were friends.
And have you enjoyed being a teammate and being somebody who will often ride in support of Greg as well?
Yeah, we do pretty much the same program. In the beginning of the year, when the team makes program, they put us together, and it's fine. I'm happy like this. It's good, cool to see where we came from. I mean, he wasn't the biggest winner in the beginning, and now he won all those big races, and he goes through the highs and the lows together, and that's what makes it interesting.
And he was close today, but it was a very strong group, wasn't it? The third on the stage. Will he be happy with that or a bit disappointed?
I think he's happy. Greg is barely ever disappointed. When he gave it all, he's happy. When he had something still in his tank, then he would be disappointed. But today he was quite exhausted, so I can say he's happy.
Well, another guy in the break was Lucas Postelberger. He and Daniel Oss were both there for Bora Hansgrohe. Now, the funny thing about this is that Lucas Postelberger featured in today's Kilometre Zero. He kept an audio diary the day of the time trial last week in Po. A very good listen it was too. He really sort of took us into his day and shared the day with us from waking up in the morning to going to bed at night. And it was a fascinating insight. The last time a rider kept an audio diary for us was, well, Lizzie Banks at the Giro Rosa, and she won a stage. And before that, Cesare Benedetti at the Giro. And the day after that was released, he won a stage. Mm. So when we noticed that Postelberger was in the break today, we thought lightning is going to strike three times here. And so did he. I caught up with him at the finish. I think he was 12th in the end. He was just behind that front group. But here was Lucas Postelberger at the finish.
It looked like an incredibly hard group to get into. Just how fast and hard was the opening to the stage?
Apparently it wasn't hard to get into, because it was just full gas on the first hill. And then we were 32 guys, or 35, and that's it. You just had to be in the front at the start, so it was just about the legs.
What's it like in a group that size to sort of manage it? Did they work quite well together?
Yeah, in the beginning not. In the middle part, we found a rhythm, but, you know, with teams like UAE and also Cofidis, I think they had four guys in. Everybody's trying to save, but in the end, you have to work together to come to the finish or as far as possible, because, I mean, 200Ks alone is not possible.
Well, it looked like you had a hard day out there. Everybody had a hard day out there. Yeah. But I guess you're pleased to be up the road and in the break.
Yeah, it was a nice try, and we almost made it, I would say. It's always a mess, and you can't predict how the race is going to finish. But, well, at least we gave it a try.
When Cesare Benedetti did an audio diary for us at the Giro, he won a stage the next day. We thought it was going to happen again today.
Yeah, I thought the same, actually, but I mean, would be nice, but maybe another time.
Well, I was at the Bora Hansgrohe bus, outside the team bus this evening, hoping to capture another exciting instalment. But I was unsuccessful because my target, Daniel Oss, was really not in a great mood when he came back. He's normally such a, he's a ray of sunshine, isn't he? But not in a good mood, leant his bike against the bus and got in the bus. And, well, he maybe felt that they were caught out by the Trentin move. So I hope to catch up with Daniel Oss before the end of the tour, but
guys like him, a really strong rider, don't get many opportunities
exactly
to try and win a stage, do they?
Yeah.
And today was a great opportunity for him and all the guys behind,
which,
you know, Van
Avermaet.
Which
is what I wanted to insensitively yeah, ask him, because he must have a lot of work to do with Sagan in the green jersey, with Emmanuel Buchmann in the top six.
Emu
Buchmann in the top six. You know, there wouldn't be many opportunities for Postelberger and Oss. And, you know, they had two very strong riders in there. Oss made it into that initial split, but then didn't go with Trentin. But I'll try. I'll let the dust settle, and I'll try and contact, make contact with Daniel Oss in another.
Little update on something I mentioned earlier about Pedler Ducharme and Marcus Burkhardt. I'm just having a look on Twitter here, and the kid that Marcus Burkhardt encountered in Brussels has been found. So Burkhardt is going to be able to send him the gift after all, and he's very grateful to Twitter for helping him find this young fan.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. The code is SISCP25 if you want to get 25% off all your sports nutrition products at scienceandsport.com. And as I say, we're very grateful to Science in Sport for their support. If you want to also try and win a day in the Team Ineos team car at either the Tour of Britain or the Vuelta, go to scienceandsport.com/sign-up to enter a wonderful competition with some great prizes, including that main prize. Lionel, is it time for...
Outside the Team Bus with...
Mike Woods, EF Education First.
How was today's stage for you, Mike?
It was a bit of a slow stage, one of those stages that we just had to a lot of opportunity to relax. I had a lot of time to sit around and think, and I actually don't like those stages. I like it when it's you're more engaged. The fact that my ribs were really bothering me today didn't help. When the adrenaline's pumping, then I don't really notice them. But when it's like a real slow, boring day like that, I really notice the ribs. Mentally, it was a long one. When it's going hard, when we're fighting for position, I don't think about that. The adrenaline starts pumping and I feel fine. But on the rest day, for example, I had no adrenaline pumping, no one doing a countdown for the start of the ride, and it was the most painful ride of the week. Hopefully it starts popping off tomorrow.
So that kind of answers my next question, which was only a few days after you'd crashed and fractured your ribs, you were in the break. I mean, most people wouldn't be able to fathom how you're able to do that, but you guys seem to manage to do that kind of thing.
I mean, I'm not the only guy to be racing with an injury. It has affected me in terms of breathing. I find that like once I start going full gas, my breathing is affected a bit. But if I'd just gone home and abandoned, I feel like it would have gone worse. I would have just been lying around. Everything would have stiffened up and I wouldn't be feeling as good as I'm feeling now. Obviously, I'm not feeling 100%. Sleep's still difficult, but with three stages left, I feel like I still have a very... I'm not going to be the same rider I was coming into this race, but I still have an outside chance of going after a stage win.
How does a general experience compare to the Giro and the Vuelta?
It's another level for sure. Just in terms of exposure, I mean, you hear the fans right now yelling Rigo's name, but it's the only event that really transcends cycling. The messages that I'm getting from people that I normally don't get, the exposure I'm getting back home in Canadian media, it's just been that much bigger. I'm really enjoying it and has been lost on me. And that's the other reason why I haven't abandoned either. This is something that I want to finish. I just want to do, yeah.
Every morning and every evening, the Colombian fans around the bus are amazing, aren't they? But yesterday and a few days ago, there were some Canadians who'd come specially to meet you. Have you managed to speak to some people who've come over from Canada or Canadians who are in Europe who've made the effort to come and say hello?
Yeah, for sure. I try and make every effort to give a thumbs up to the Canadian flag anytime I see a Canadian flag or come and talk to somebody. I make sure to talk to anybody that's Canadian. I'm a proud Canadian, and it makes me feel really special when someone's spend all their money to do their family vacation to come and watch me race.
Have you spoken to Hugo, the other Canadian in the peloton?
Yeah, certainly. Hugo's a great buddy of mine. We have raced on several national team projects together, and he crashed my place in the winter, and so it's been really nice doing this, our first tour together.
And lastly, do you know what your season entails after the Tour de France, or are you not thinking that far at the moment?
I'm going to be doing San Sebastian a week after. It's a race that suits me. If my ribs can come around, I think I'll be good there, and then rest up a bit and go back home. I haven't been home since last November, and I'm really excited to be racing at the Montreal and Quebec Grand Prix. So Montreal is a race that's not far from my house. It's almost like a home race, so I'm really looking forward to doing it.
Well, Michael Woods there, Lionel, that's another one, another team ticked off.
Not quite the answer I was expecting there, because I thought he would have benefited from a relatively calm day with his two cracked ribs, but he would much prefer to be getting stuck into the racing and at least have the surge of adrenaline to kind of make the day go a little bit more quickly.
Well, he's going to have opportunities, I think, the next few days, isn't he? What's the latest sort of weather forecast for the next few days? Hang on, I think we've got a guest weather forecaster.
Heavy rain.
Well, that was second time we've heard that tonight. That was Daniel Oss in Happier Times. Anyone who listens to our Kilometre Zero series may well recognise that. We did have a bit of heavy rain today. Is the forecast still for storms over the next few days, Francois?
It's for rain and much colder weather, but they're now mentioning showers rather than storms. So, I mean, it's the mountains, so you never know. But what's for sure, you know, the heat wave is over. We're going towards, you know, much cooler weather, and the Saturday stage to Val Thorens is supposed to be very, very cold, and you know, they announced temperatures of 4 or 5 in the morning, so which means, you know, if you forgot to take your jumpers, guys, might be a good idea to buy one, or you know, or I have two actually in my suitcase, but you know, I can maybe lend you
one
of those.
No, I'm okay. Thank you. That's very kind.
And as for rain, I mean, the rain was scheduled as well today at the finishing gap, and it didn't happen. So, well, you never know. Obviously, they knew. I mean, most teams knew in advance and know that, you know, there's probably going to be storms, to be cold weather, which could affect the altitude plus the cold plus the rain. It's only kind of 3 days of competitive racing in the Tour, and yet another Tour de France is starting.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I said to you both earlier that I'd noticed once again in the temperatures approaching 40 degrees today, Thibaut Pinot every single day has been met at the finish with a long-sleeved team jacket, and which he's worn every day back to his bus. The only rider I've seen doing that has been almost like a kind of superstitious or religious ritual that he's performed every day. But I guess it's just he's in that zone of doing all these things right and taking care of the little details. And who can forget that last year at the Giro he was riding onto the podium, wasn't he, with 24 hours to go, when he fell very ill indeed and ended up in hospital. So he's taking no chances at all with his health and obviously still very focused, especially on these next few days.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, I talked briefly to Nicolas Portal at the team bus at the stage when the rumours were already, you know, coming up of the you know, possible, at least of the row between Martin and Rowe. But we mentioned the mountains coming up, and it was interesting what Portal had to say, because he insisted that, again, we might not see Team Ineos leading the way up the mountains like it did in the past, because he said, you know, there are other teams who are looking for a GC position. There are teams defending Alaphilippe's jersey, the Conin Quickstep. There are teams, you know, Lotto Soudal defending the Polkadot jersey. So he kind of ruled out a traditional, Team Sky Tour de France. And it might make, if it's true, and we'll find out tomorrow, but once again, if they had a plan to lead the race from the start tomorrow, they lost one of their main guys to do that. That's Luke Rowe. So, you know, maybe we'll see a different, like in the Pyrenees, a different kind of tours from the previous ones, and it will probably make it even more exciting.
Well, this is a speculation light podcast generally, isn't it? But with only 2:14 separating the top six, and with Geraint Thomas in second place, 1:35 behind Julian Alaphilippe, Francois, what is going to happen tomorrow? Will Alaphilippe still be in yellow in Valois tomorrow?
Well, honestly, Julian Alaphilippe himself said it from the start of the Tour, that he had no GC ambitions whatsoever, and that he didn't expect to be in a yellow, well, in the Alps for one thing, and it's certainly not in Paris. I know that, Lionel, you spoke to a number of team directors, I did too, and they predicted a huge loss of time for Julian Alaphilippe in the Alps. We saw that in the last stage in the Pyrenees, he struggled in the last climb because, you know, it was too long to, you know, and we actually, well, if only tomorrow, you know, going up Col de Vars, Issoire and Galibier. I mean, the three, you know, classic mythical, mountain passes of the Tour de France are really, maybe you can, I mean, if the race is not too, you know, tough, and if there's no big battles, if there's a breakaway, and he can go, you know, reach the bottom of the Galibier with the rest of the GC contenders, he might save it for one day, but, you know, by a very small margin. But in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure that in his opinion, you know, it'll be lost by Friday.
Well, before we go tonight, sorry, Lionel.
I was just going to say, this is the latest in the race that a Frenchman has been in yellow since Laurent Fignon in 1989, who, of course, started the final day in yellow and lost it to Greg LeMond in the final time trial. That will be the subject of our...
Tommy Voeckler in 2011.
Well, that's a very good point, actually, yeah.
Because I thought Andy Schleck took that from him on the stage that finished on the Galibier.
I think you're right.
Let's just check.
I think
which was
Tommy
just
Voeckler
a
probably
couple of days
had the yellow jersey 4 days before.
I stand corrected, Rich. You're right. Yes, Thomas Voeckler had the yellow jersey in 2011 after stage 18, lost it on stage 19. So Alaphilippe has to hold it tomorrow, basically, to equal Voeckler.
I was wrong, though. Voeckler kept it on the Galibier stage, which Andy Schleck won, and it was the following day that Andy Schleck took it for one day before the time trial. I mean, that was a close Tour de France that year, but I think we can agree this is a better one. Just the calibre of the riders, I think, and the nature of the race. And yeah, there's still so much to play for. Well, we're going to be talking about that over the next few days. So let's wrap it up and go and find dinner. That's obviously the priority. Before we go, a quick mention for if you want to follow the race during the stages, one of the best places to do so is at the Telegraph live blog, which is done by our great friend John McCleary. He really knows his stuff. Telegraph.co.uk. You'll find his live blog there covering the stages of the tour as they unfold. Another mention for our event in Harrogate during the World Championships. Lots of tickets sold already for that, which has been great. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com, live events down the side, and you can purchase your tickets there for our event in Harrogate on the Friday night of the World Championships. Anything else? We've got another episode, Kilometer Zero, coming tomorrow on hotels, and that features a cycling podcast listener who has come up with a league table for ranking the hotels stayed in by the teams. Fascinating stuff from him. So that's coming tomorrow, supported by Hansgrohe, of course. And, well, all that's left for us is to say thanks to a few friends of the podcast who've signed up at thecyclingpodcast.com. Thank you very much indeed to Alex McCarty, Ian Williams, John Rhodes, Glenn Forrest, John Rhys-Newman.
Grand merci à Douglas Priscott, Daniel Roden, Anthony Enright, Sarah Elliwood, Lion is Julien.
Well, Liam, I think that's a...
Liam.
Liam, oh. Heist Julien. Julien. We've thanked Liam before. He
does
ring a bell. And thanks also to Michael Coleman, Richard Sully, Luke Minshaw, Greg Hilton and Jethro Nagel.
Thank you very much, Francois.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.